This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
We discussed how it is possible to see one's material wealth as being a spiritual force, that through the possession of material wealth one is in fact able to discharge one's indebtedness, and discharge of one's indebtedness is the guarantee for one's pride and one's dignity, and that's a precondition for any kind of spiritual achievement. And that's what the Sotan wanted to be tested. Would Eeyore be willing to sacrifice physical things in order to retain his wealth? If he would, that would mean that Eeyore really saw wealth as something spiritual. If Eeyore would not be willing to sacrifice physical things in order to retain his wealth, then he would regard wealth also as something physical. And so you'll remember we learned last week that Hashem asked Eeyore at the in his sleep whether he would prefer to be punished through, whether he would prefer to suffer physical affliction or the loss of his money, and he chooses physical affliction, anything but not poverty. We ended last week by asking, why did Hashem then have to carry that further? Surely if Hashem put that question to him and he answered that question, surely what more does Hashem have to know? Hashem puts the question to his neshama, Hashem puts the question to his soul. So Hashem has questioned the very essence of Eeyore, his soul. And his soul has answered, I would give anything but not my wealth. I want to retain my... I wouldn't accept poverty as a form of suffering, because that's the worst form of suffering. Not to have the ability to discharge my indebtedness. Surely once that interaction had taken place, surely once that discussion had taken place, Hashem knew everything he had to know. Was there still any question that maybe Eeyore preferred his health to his wealth or whatever? We see that even the absolute knowledge of the Ribbono Shel Olam is no substitute for the reality of performance. That there is an aspect of reality in this world, in Olam Hazeh, in this material world, that exceeds the reality even of the knowledge of Hashem, so to say. Which gives us a different kind of respect for what Olam Hazeh is, what this world is. Sometimes we have to say, this world is nothing, it's only Olam Haba, we have to worry about it. Not so simple. This world has an element of it, an element of reality that exceeds even the reality of the Ribbono Shel Olam's own knowledge. And that's why he put us here, to act out the whole thing. Hashem knows what decisions we're going to take, so why does he put us through all the suffering, all the agmas nefesh? He knows what we're going to do. So why act it all out? Why play it all out if he knows what we're going to do? Why does a teacher give his class an examination if the teacher knows exactly what mark each child's going to get? The teacher's really good, he knows exactly where each child's holding. He doesn't have to give the child the class an examination. He knows what they'll do. He knows exactly where they swat, how much each one will swat, how much each one will know, how much each one understands. And he can determine very accurately what the marks should be for each child in his class. And yet he gives him the exam. So why does he put him through the agmas nefesh of the exam? Because the growth comes from writing the exam. The growth doesn't come from knowing the answers. The growth comes from having to take the potential and to translate it into actual. Until the thing is an actuality, until the potential has been translated into actual, the potential is worthless. It has no value. And that's a concept that is unique to Olam Hazeh, that's unique to this world. Until this world was created, there wasn't such a concept. Until this world was created, potential is all that was important. And Hashem's world, the world up there, was a world of potential, a world of neshamas, a world of spirits. Did they ever do any mitzvahs? No. Were they ever tried? Did they ever have any sernis? Did they ever have any tribulations? No. Did they ever have any examinations? No. So what was their greatness? Enormous potential. A human soul. Sure, so a human soul has enormous potential, but Hashem wasn't satisfied with that. Hashem wanted to see the potential acted out. He wanted to see the potential developed in reality. He wanted to see it in a simulated form, I suppose. And that's what this world is. It's a massive simulator. Hashem says, right, you've got all the potential, you know what to do, get in there and do it. And our doing it is what in fact creates the greatness. The reward that we get for the mitzvah that we do is from the doing it, not from the willing to do it, not from the wanting to do it, not from the being prepared to do it. The reward that we get is only from the doing it. The doing it in fact creates the reward. That is the reward. Through doing it we develop a greatness, we develop an aspect to ourselves and to our neshamas, which is in itself the reward. It's not just a consequence. Because you did it, you get reward. Because you don't need to go through the test in that case. And if you just, Hashem knows who will pass the test, He knows who will pass, He knows who will fail. Why go and put us through it? And this really is what takes place in the Sefer of Iyov. Hashem is trying to test Iyov's sincerity and Iyov's attitudes and Iyov's value systems. But test not in the sense that Hashem doesn't know what the answers are and He wants to find out the answers through the test. That's not the purpose. The purpose of the test, there are two meanings to the word test. The one is to test in order to see what the results will be, and the other is to test in order to strengthen it, in order to put it through the process. And that's what Hashem is doing through Iyov. He wants Iyov to make the choices. Not just to know that he has the potential to make the choices, he wants Iyov to actually make the choices. And it's the making of choices that determine a value system. A value system is not just a belief system. There's a difference. The belief system is one thing. There's not all that much difference between people's belief systems. And when it comes to beliefs, most people believe the same kind of things. Most people believe that it's wrong to steal and it's wrong to tell lies. Everybody believes that. Even these people who've been caught for fraud of millions and millions of rands, if you would ask them, do you teach your children that it's wrong to steal? They'll say, yes, of course we do. It says so in the Torah, it says so in the Bible. Everybody agrees that it's wrong to steal. The belief system isn't what determines the values. I always give the example. Hitler also did it l'shem shemayim. He also believed in good and in just and in the right thing. He just had a cockeyed sense of what was right and what was just. But he also believed it was God's will to wipe out the Jews and all the rest of it for whatever funny reasoning that he had for that. That was God's will by him. He was doing the right thing. He wasn't deliberately doing the wrong thing. People don't normally deliberately do the wrong thing. Very often they have a value, and this what they're doing doesn't fit into that value. This is an exception. There are other reasons why this is okay. So believing alone is not sufficient. Having good intention is not sufficient. Having the potential is not sufficient. The only time we know what our values really are is when they've been put to the test and we make our choices. And the more the pressure is turned on, the more fine are the choices that we make, the more fine-tuned is the environment in which we're making those choices. And that's really what Hashem wants to test in the case of Iyov, and in the case of all of us, to larger and smaller degrees. We all go through an Iyov experience. It's just a question of how heavily and at what stage in our lives. But we all go, the whole of life, but this book of Iyov is a book of life. It is the story of human life. It's just a very extreme example of it. But fundamentally, it's a story of human life and the choices that we make under those conditions. And again, the less pressure that there is on us, the less the choices mean. If people had limitless time, they didn't die, people were eternal, then how you chose to spend your time would not be an expression of values at all. Because you can get around to everything eventually. There's no limitation. It's only because there is a shortage of time, it's only because death exists, that the choice of how to spend a given moment of time has a value to it. It's only because there's a limitation that choice becomes an ethical issue. If there's no limitation, choice is not an ethical issue. If there are six respirator machines in the hospital and three patients, there's no ethical decision involved. If there are six patients and three machines, there are ethical decisions that are involved. As you turn the pressure on, as you limit the resources, and you increase the needs, the real value system is being tested, the real value system is being examined. And that's what we find happening in this country at the moment. As long as there was lots of money around and everybody was doing okay, ethics wasn't an issue. It was quite easy to be fairly moral and straight. There was plenty available and everybody could manage. Now that the resources are being tightened and the needs are growing, so you've got a growing population with growing expectations at a massive rate, and certainly no more resources than there used to be, if anything less resources than there used to be, now ethical choices exist. Who's going to get those resources? How am I going to handle my resources? Am I going to cut them all for myself? Am I going to share them? Then it becomes a little bit more of a value issue. And as life gets harder, so the day-to-day choices become more significant from an ethical and a moral point of view. And that's all that Rebbe Shlomo is doing to Iyad. He's turning the screws on, and right through the Sefer he turns harder and harder and harder to put Iyad in a more difficult environment where each choice has more weight to it. That's really what he's doing. He's increasing the gearage so that every choice has much more meaning to it. Vayokum Iyad vayikro es mi'ilu vayogos es roshu. And Iyad got up and he did kriya, tore his coat, and he cut his hair. Vayipol arzo vayishtochu, and he fell down to the ground and he bowed. Vayomer, and he said, bear in mind what's just happened. He has just lost all his children, he's just lost all his cattle, he's lost all his property, his buildings, everything's gone. Says he, Oroim yotzosi mi beten imi, I came out of my mother's womb naked, for Orum Oshuv Shomo, and I shall return to Hashem naked. Hashem Nosan Vashem Lokach, Hashem gave and Hashem took, Yehi Shem Hashem Averoch, may the name of Hashem be blessed. An amazing reaction. Vayokum Iyev, just look at that again. Vayokum Iyev, Iyev got up, says the Malbim, Levorech mu'umo, because he's about to make a brocha and he wants to make the brocha standing up. What does it mean to make a brocha? You make a brocha when you're about to eat something, you make a brocha. You make a shechiyonu when something nice and unusual has happened. That's when you make a brocha. Yehov has just heard this terrible news and he stands up to make his brocha. And the Gemara says, "Kashem shemvorchim al atoivo, kein mvorchim al haro." Just as you say a brocha on good, so you have to say a brocha on bad things as well, on bad news as well. And that kashem means, it doesn't just say you have to make a brocha on bad. It doesn't say chayuv odom levorich al haro, a man has to make a brocha on bad. It doesn't say that. It says he must make the brocha on bad in the same way as he makes the brocha on good. That means the emotions you have when you're saying Boruch Dayan or Emes has to be the same as the emotions when you're saying Sheikh Yonah Vikiyamon of Yonah of Manazik. That same happiness, that same joy that you make a Sheikh Yonah with, you have to be able to make a brocha on bad with as well. That's an amazing halacha. It's an amazing thing. How can a human being do that? How is it possible to get all this bad news? But that's what Yiv does. By Yokun Yiv, he gets up, gets ready to make a brocha, he does kriyo, cuts his hair for various reasons, bows down, and he says, I left my mother's womb naked, I'm going to go back naked. Hashem took, Hashem gave, Hashem took. Yehi Shem Hashem Bevoiroch. Praise be the name of Hashem. Baruch Hashem. That's what he says. What does it mean? Why? How does he come to that? In this verse 21, in Pasuk Chof Aleph, he is actually beginning to reason with himself. And in this prayer that he says to Hashem, he is actually giving the rationale for his ability to handle it. And he says, what have I lost? I've lost something I wasn't born with. I've lost something that I acquired during my lifetime. There was a stage in my life when I never had it. And when I never had it, what was I missing? Was it so terrible when I never had it? When I was a little baby and I didn't have all the camels and all the sheep, when I was a child and I didn't have all that, when I was a young man and I didn't have all that, was it so terrible? I managed, I lived, I started, I worked, so I'll do it again. I'm a living human being, I've got it, I can start up again, it's not the end of the world. I can manage. And it's going to happen again that I'm going to have nothing. In other words, if I started with nothing and I know for sure I'm going to have nothing in the future, then what I do have is only in trust. And if I do have is only in trust, I can't become too attached to it in any case. That's perhaps what goes wrong with certain bankers. They don't realize that what they've got is in trust. It's not theirs. They actually become attached to it. And they don't do it. It doesn't belong to them. It wasn't yours, b'chatchil. It never was yours. Didn't belong to you, it doesn't belong to you, and it won't belong to you. That's what one has to get clear in one's own mind. When one is handling money that doesn't belong to oneself, what you've got to get clear in your own mind is, it wasn't mine, it isn't mine, and it will never be mine. That's it. When you've got that clear, you know how to handle it. But the thing is, you've got to regard your own money in the same way. It wasn't mine, it isn't mine, and it won't be mine. I didn't used to have it. There will be a time when I won't have it. And in fact, I don't have it now either. It's in trust. So the same as the trustee gave it, the person who gives it, the owner. The same as the owner of the assets gave it to me at a certain point, in the full understanding that I'm only going to have it for a period of time and he'll take it away from me. Can't get upset when he takes it away from me. That was the condition in the beginning. You're going to take it away from me. So the fact that I start off with nothing and that I end with nothing is the most important element to be aware of right through the middle period of one's life. I didn't used to have it and I won't have it in the future. Then you relax. The only time we become very attached to our things is if we believe we're going to have it forever. We need to understand that's not going to be so. And if we really believe that, imagine if as we were able to afford things, we were able to buy a house, we were able to buy a motor car, we were able to do certain things. If we say to ourselves, this is wonderful that I'm able to do this because I know for sure next week I won't be able to do it anymore. I've been given this for a week to enjoy. Fine, if somebody lends you their holiday house for a week. So you enjoy it thoroughly. But when it's time to leave, you don't get all depressed and what will I do now? And oh, look what I'm losing, what a terrible loss. The sense of loss is commensurate with the sense of, with the degree of attachment that existed. It says, Eeyore, I was never attached to it. I knew it was temporary. It doesn't bother me. It was nice while it lasted, and it doesn't bother me. And that's not a show. He's not saying a phrase. He really means that. And he shows that he really means it by the way he says his bracha. And the next thing is, I didn't even earn it. Hashem nosa. This was a handout. Isn't something I worked for? If I really worked for it, then I might be resentful that Hashem has taken it away. If I really earned it. I didn't really earn it. Yeah, I worked, I did certain things, but what I contributed was nowhere near as much as Hashem gave me. Hashem gave me far more than the value of the contribution I've made to the world. I didn't deserve what I had, and therefore I can't consider it as something I earned. And if it's not something I earned, how can I become attached to it? So there are two things that can create an attachment to material things. The one is always having had it and believing one's always going to have it. And the second thing is earning it. But if you realize that you haven't earned it, that what you're given, that whatever we're given, is much, much more than we deserve. And if we realize that whatever we're given was given halfway down the line, it wasn't something we were born with, and it's going to be taken away from us eventually. If we realize those two things, the sense of loss is much less. And that's how the sense of loss one can handle it. And that's what Eeyore says. Oroim yotosi mibetin imi v'oroim oshuv shomo Hashem nosan v'Hashem lakoch yihi shem Hashem avoyroch. As a result of that, he can say yihi shem Hashem avoyroch. He can say, he can bless the Ribbono Shel Olam's name with tremendous simcha and with real conviction that he has no objection, he has no bitterness, nothing at all. And then the Pasuk adds, that's again how he achieved this. Chol zois loy choto Eeyore loy nosan tiflo lelukim. And despite all this, Eeyore did not sin, and he did not attribute crookedness to Hashem. One of the perhaps the most important issue that is going to be debated through the Sefer right the way through is the apparent irreconcilability of three axioms. One axiom we've had already, and that is that Eeyore was a tzaddik. We've established that Eev, we told us in the beginning, again, whether he was a fictional tzaddik or a real tzaddik, doesn't matter. For the sake of this discussion, we've created a man that was Tam, v'yosho, v'yirei elikim, v'sor meiro. There was absolutely no reason in the world that Eev should be punished. Absolute tzaddik gomer. It's Eev. The next axiom is that God is just. And the third axiom is that God is omnipotent. That the Ribbono Shel Olam can do what he wants. There's no power other than the Ribbono Shel Olam. If we take those three axioms, then Eev has a problem. One of them has to be false. Either Eev is not righteous and is being punished, and that is just. Or Eev is righteous, in which case he's not being punished, which means there is some other force causing all this evil, other than Hashem, in which case Hashem isn't omnipotent. Or it's Hashem is doing it, in which case he's not just. So it's easy to believe that Hashem is just, it's easy to believe that he's omnipotent, and it's easy to believe that Eev is a tzaddik, but you can't believe all three together. That's the test that Eev is put to. How is he going to juggle these three axioms? How is he going to be able to handle a belief in himself, a belief in Hashem, in Hashem's justice, and in Hashem's omnipotence? That's the real issue. And in this pasuk, we see how Eev does it in phase one. There are many more phases that poor old Eev is going to have to go through. But in phase one, we already see here how he does it. First thing we're told is Bechol Zois Loi Choto Eev. Eev didn't sin. Here the Malbim explains that the one possible way that Eev could have handled it was to have said, the Ribbono Shel Olam is just, that's for sure. I am a tzaddik, that we know. And therefore I must assume that this is all coincidental. These things happen. What can we do? It's a coincidence. It happens to be me this time. It can happen. It wasn't a deliberate act of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the one thing Eev could have said. In other words, he is then questioning Hashem's omnipotence. He is giving credence to the existence of coincidence. Now we do that every day of our lives, just about, oh, what a coincidence, you hear people say. There's no such thing as a coincidence. It would have been all too easy for Eve to say, I'm not going to question Hashem. No, these things, what can you do? Have my bad muzzle. These things can happen. Can happen to anybody. If it happened to me, it's finished. If you do that, then the whole relationship with Ribbono Shel Olam changes, because you're actually doing away with Hashgacha. You're actually doing away with the fact that God watches and responds to actions. If a man can suffer to this extent, and you can attribute it to coincidence, then you're saying that there is a power other than Hashem at play. Then you're saying that Hashem is not omnipotent. Then you're saying that Hashem's Hashgacha is not complete, that Hashem doesn't have complete control over the world. And if that's the case, then you can do what you want. Then there's no morality. You can believe in God and all the rest of it, but if you don't believe that God's in control, then there's hefkerus. Then there can be immorality. The other thing that you could have said is, that Eev could have said is, no, I believe that God has complete control over the world. And so what's happening? Why is all this happening to me? He would have to say that in this case God isn't being just. He has the two options. Either I've got to say, this is God's action and it's not just, or I've got to say, this isn't God. But I can't say it's God and it's just. Eev did neither. Bechol zos loy choto Eev. He didn't take the view which would have led him to sin, that is, that there's no Hashgacha. Nor did he take the view that there is Hashgacha, but this is unjust, which would have been nosan tiflo lelukim, which would have been criticizing Hashem, attributing crookedness to the Ribbono Shel Olam's way. He did neither of those. That means at this point, Eev has found out how to juggle those three axioms. At this point, Eev has worked out how to deal with all three of them and how to reconcile them. Yes, Hashem is just. Yes, Hashem is omnipotent. And yes, I am a tzaddik. So what's all this about? There's only one thing I can conclude. And that is that this isn't evil at all. That this isn't wicked at all. That this isn't bad at all. Well, not only isn't it bad, but I must conclude it's good. How can that be? So Eve will have to try and work out how he can conclude it's good. It's a difficult thing.
There's the famous story of Rabbi Akiva in the Gemara. It's a Gemara in Brochus. La'ilom, Rabbi Akiva says, La'ilom yehei odom ragi loymar, kol da avid rachman alatav. Whatever Hashem does is for the good. It's, by the way, not correct to believe that everything will be alright.
That's not necessary, so. If you get into an aeroplane and you say Tfilas HaDerech, it doesn't mean that the plane won't crash. It doesn't mean that at all, I'm sorry to tell you. The plane might well crash, even though you said Tfilas HaDerech. All that it means is that whatever happens is for the best. And if it crashes, then that's the best thing that could have happened. For whatever reason. That we don't understand. But believing in Hashgacha and believing in the Rebbeinu Shel Olam doesn't mean that you believe that everything is going to turn out just the way you want it to turn out. No. All it means is that the way it will turn out is the best way for you. Whether you want it that way or not is not what's relevant. And says Rabbi Akiva, what one has to teach oneself to say is that Kol de'avid rachmana, whatever Hashem does, is latav, is for good purpose, even if we don't see it right away. He heard Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva said that as a result of personal experience. Have a ozil beurcho. He was going around down the. He was traveling in the road. The ozil imei tarmegoylo chamro ushrogo, and he took with him a chicken, so that he would have what to eat, and he had his donkey so that he could travel. Ushrogo, and he had light. He had a candle, a torch. Mata laho duchta bo yishpiza. He came to a little place where he wanted to sleep in an inn. Lo yavule, and the inn was full, and they wouldn't have him there. Nofik bas bedabra, so he went and slept outside. There was nothing else to do. It was nightfall. The inn, there was no place in the inn. Can you imagine Rabbi Akiva, the great Rabbi Akiva, sleeping outside in the road, squatting? Look, he's got his chicken, he's got his donkey, he's got his torch. He can sit and he'll be all right. Ato arya, achle lechamra. In the middle of the night, a lion came by and ate up the donkey. Viata shunra v'achle letarmegoylo, and a fox came along with some other little animal and ate up the chicken. V'ata zikka v'chabe l'shog, and a big wind came and blew out his torch. Omar kolma d'ovid rachmonu l'tav. Rabbi Akiva, as was his way, said, whatever Hashem does is for good reason. I don't know why or what. Now I'm stuck. I don't have a torch. I can't see where I'm going. I don't have a donkey to carry on my journey or to go back with. And I don't have what to eat. But I'm sure it's all for good reason. Belelia ata geisa v'shavye. In the night time, a band of robbers came and they captured the innkeeper and his guests. Omalu said to them, I knew that there was some good reason for it. I wasn't in the inn, and they didn't see my donkey, and they didn't say there wasn't the chicken to make a noise, and they couldn't see my candle, so I got away. Had the torch been alight, they would have seen me. Had the chicken been there, it would have crowed. Had the donkey been there, it would have brayed. And they would have found me. So Hashem organized before that there should be no donkey, no chicken, and no candle, no torch, so that when the robbers came, they wouldn't see me. That story is very deep and very important. That's the time frame in Rabbi Akiva's story is very short. It's just a matter of a couple of hours. But we have to realize that sometimes that time frame can be expanded over years, sometimes over centuries, and maybe even more. One has to understand and one has to know that whatever it is, somewhere along the line, it's latav, there's a good reason for it. And until the robbers came, if you would have said to Rabbi Akiva, what do you think the good reason might be? What is this? Oh, everything Hashem does is for good. Why would Hashem have done such a thing to you? You, the great Rabbi Akiva, having to sleep on the ground outside, without light, without anything to eat, without a donkey to carry on your journey, why would Hashem do such a thing to you? What could Rabbi Akiva have answered? I don't know why. I don't know the reason, but I do know there's a good reason. That's all I know. And a couple of hours later, the reason becomes clear. As I said, sometimes it's not a couple of hours, sometimes it's a couple of weeks, sometimes it's months, sometimes it's many years later, but the reason becomes clear. And so Eve says, Hashem is just. That's an axiom. I know that for sure. There's no question about that. Hashem is omnipotent. I know that for sure. There's no question about that. and for the sake of our story, he knows that he's a tzaddik. Therefore, there's only one unknown in the equation. To most of us, the X in the equation, the variable in the equation, would be Hashem's justice or Hashem's omnipotence. That's what we would be willing to question. He says, Eve, that's a constant. I can't question the omnipotence and I can't question the justice. Those are constants. The X, as far as I'm concerned, the variable in my equation, is whether what happened was good or bad. That's variable. And since the other constants I can't play around with, my equation tells me that what Hashem did was good. That's it. If that's the case, I can make a bracha with joy. That's the way he operates. He's worked out logically that what happened was good. Although his senses tell him it's bad, his feelings tell him it's bad, everything tells him it's bad. But his logic tells him it was a good thing, it was the right thing to do. Sometimes one has to use one's instincts and sometimes one can't use one's instincts. But one thing is for sure, that when one's instincts are at odds with unquestioned logic and belief and faith, one has to go by one's logic and one's belief and one's faith. I've mentioned to you before that it's apparently very, very difficult for pilots of aeroplanes, certainly new ones, to trust their instruments over and above their instincts. It's very, very difficult. And in fact, they don't usually do it. I think I've mentioned to you that they tell me that if you're flying in a cloud without instrument rating, you have a life expectancy of a maximum of 2 minutes. That's without any mountains in the clouds. Clear clouds, you can be 20,000 feet above the ground with nothing there, clear, no mountains, no tall buildings, nothing. Good weather, just you're in a cloud. And if you don't have instrument ratings, you have a life expectancy of 2 minutes. Because you don't have a horizon, they tell me, and the clouds are moving around your little aeroplane, and it doesn't, and that now you're flying crooked. But you're sure that the instruments are wrong. So now you're flying at 20 degrees. To the left. Before very long, again, the clouds are still going in the same direction, so you're still convinced that you're now flying 20 degrees to the right. So you turn another 20 degrees to the left. And before very long, you're in a spin. And that doesn't take very long to hit the ground under those conditions. We tend to go by our instinct, not by our instruments. He is operating by his instruments. He says, I'm in a storm, I'm in the clouds, I can't see where I'm going, I don't know why, I can't see beyond them. But my instruments tell me I'm going straight. My instruments tell me God is just. My instruments tell me God is omnipotent. My instruments tell me I'm a tzaddik, I've done nothing wrong. So I can only conclude that what has happened is not bad at all. It looks bad, it feels bad, it sounds bad. What can I do? But my instruments tell me it isn't bad. And he goes by his instruments. And he says, Yehi Shem Hashem Avirach. Under those circumstances, I can praise the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that's what he does. The Chazal say in the Yalkut, Asei mi Ahavo, it's important to serve Hashem out of love. Shim Boto Lisnoi Dasha Ata Oyhev, the Ein Oyhev Soine. It's important to serve Hashem out of love, because if something happens to make you hate Hashem, remember that you're a lover of Hashem. She'ato oyhev. Not that you love Hashem, but that you are a lover of Hashem. That is a quality that you have. And if you have that quality, ein oyhev soine. A lover can't hate. It's important to have that quality. Asei miyiro, serve Hashem out of fear. She'imbata livo, is because if you come to resent Hashem, Dasha'ata yore, remember you are a fearer of God. That is a quality you have. The ein yore boyet, and one who fears doesn't get resentful. He doesn't discard. That's a quality that one needs to have. He have had those qualities. He was an oyhev and he was a yore, and there was no deviation from that. No matter what the storms outside were, that in no way deflected him from the direction in which he was going. And so Eev gets through his first test with flying colors. There's absolutely no possibility of faulting Eev in the slightest way in the way he handles this very difficult crisis that he's just come through.
Vayehi hayoyim vayavuyu b'neiho elukim in chapter 2, and it wasn't the day and the powers of Hashem came, lishyatev al Hashem, to stand by Hashem. Vayavuyu gam hasoton b'seichom lishyatev al Hashem. And the Satan also came to stand by Hashem. Vayemer Hashem el Satan, ein bizeh tovu, and Hashem said to the Satan, where do you come from? Vayan Satan es Hashem, vayemer, and the Satan answered Hashem, and he said, Mishut ba'aretz mizhareko. I've been floating all over the world and walking through it. Vayemer Hashem el Satan, asamto libcho el avdi Iyuv. Did you notice my servant Iyuv? Ki ein kamoyu ba'aretz, there's none like him in the world. Ish tom v'yosho yirei elikim v'somero. A pure person, straight, God-fearing, and not doing evil. Ve'oidenu machazik besumosoi, and he still stands by his perfection. Vatesiseni voy levaloichino, and you have tried him and tested him for nothing, to try and destroy him for nothing. Look how he's absolutely, he stood by it 100%. The phrase used here for the Satan standing by Hashem is different to the first time. The first time it says that all these forces came to Hashem, and the Satan was there as well. Here it says, and the Satan also came among them, lehisyatev al Hashem, which means literally to stand on Hashem, which means to act, to force Hashem, to actually influence the actions of Hashem. And that is because the first phase of Iyuv's Tzoros could result merely by Hashem's withdrawing his protection from Iyuv. The loss of Iyuv's wealth and all that, that's something which all that you need to cause that is the withdrawal of Hashem's protection. It is natural to lose wealth. It is natural to lose the things around you. That's back to the cause of entropy. That's the Satan. Just leave the Satan in place and automatically things will deteriorate. You don't have to do anything active. But you remember we said last week that Iyuv as a human being had conquered the Satan within him. Iyuv had overcome the power of disintegration within himself. Iyuv was a tzaddik, and Iyuv had this balance that we talked about, with the power of ascendancy and the power of descendance and so on, the power of gravity and the power of upliftment. Iyuv had actually been able to overcome the power of gravity, and he'd been able to uplift himself, he'd been able to force himself upwards. So in Iyuv as a human being, the Satan had no ability to rule. Those round and about Iyuv, yes. And you remember Iyuv was worried about his children in case they sinned, and he would bring a korban in case they sinned. In other words, they hadn't reached that level of perfection yet. So when the Satan wanted to bring destructiveness into the surroundings of Iyuv, all he needed was for God to withdraw for a while. But when Satan wanted to attack Iyuv himself, it wasn't sufficient for God to withdraw. Because even with God withdrawing, there was no Satan in Iyuv. So the Satan has to get Hashem to be proactive. It's not good enough just to stand by. Hashem actually has to become active in the second phase. Vayan ha-Satan es Hashem vayomer, and the Satan says to Hashem, and he says, Oir b'ad oir, v'chol asher lo ish, yitein b'ad nafsho. Skin for skin, and everything that a man has, he will sacrifice for his life. Two different interpretations as to what oir ba'ad oir means. Rashi learns that what it means is if you're about to get a blow in your head, you put your hand up to protect your head. So you're willing to use something more exterior to save something more interior. You're willing to damage your hand in order to save your head. Or it can be clothing. Or external skin, the leather and the hide that we wear as clothing, we would be willing to sacrifice in order to protect our lives. So if a robber comes and he says, give me your clothes, we'll give him the clothes in order to be able to protect ourselves. The chol ashelish, whatever a man has, he'll be willing to give to save his life. And so says the Satan to Iyuv, to Hashem, you think that Iyuv wasn't moved by what he lost because he really believes that everything's for the good? He wasn't moved by what he's lost because he was just so relieved that it was to save himself. He realized that
that you were punishing him, that really he maybe he's done certain things wrong, and instead of punishing him, you've taken away his belongings, but you've left his life intact. You've left his neshoma intact, you've left his body intact. For that, he's only too happy, he's still alive. As long as he's alive, he can rebuild. Ulam shlachno yodcho v'ga el atzmoy v'el besoroy. But if you just send out your hand and touch his essence, and touch his own flesh, im lo yal ponecho yevorecheko, for sure he will turn around against you, and he will curse you. Vayomer Hashem el ha-Satan, hinoi v'yodecho. And Hashem said to the Satan, here he is in your hand, aches nafsho shmo, but don't kill him. Don't take his life. You can do whatever you want, but don't take his life. And Chazal say on that, interesting, Godel tzare shel Satan mishel Iyuv. The Satan suffered more than Iyuv did. Moshe le'eved she'omar le'rabo yishvores achavis ushmor yeina. Imagine telling a servant, the king says to the servant, I'm giving you a job to do, and if you don't do it successfully, I'm going to chop off your head. What you have to do is, you see that barrel of wine there? You've got to smash that barrel, but don't spill a drop of wine in the process. Imagine what the poor guy has to do, and imagine what torture that is. Hashem says to Iyov, bring him to the door of death. But Hashem says to Satan, bring him to the door of death, but don't let him die. So Satan is going to bring so much adversity to him that the effort to keep him alive is harder than Iyov's effort to survive. The tzora, the toil to be able to preserve Iyov's life amidst all this is going to require more effort on the part of Satan than survival is going to require on the part of Iyov. Which gives us an idea as to how close to death this poor man is going to be brought. Vayetzei ha-Satan meis pnei Hashem, and the Satan went out from before Hashem. Vayach es Iyov b'shchin ro, and he smote Iyov with boils, mikaf raglo ad kod kodoy, from the foot of the sole of his foot until the top of his skull. Vayikach lo icheres lihisgore et boy, and